Hi, this is Simon Dale, and recently my dad popped over. Now, my dad is star of Ugly Betty, star of The OC, star of Neighbours. He's also shown up in Lost, X-Files, and he's hitting the big screen next year in Indiana Jones Part 4, which I obviously cannot wait for. But he was over recently to work with James Nesbitt on a show called The Midnight Men, which sounds really cool. But while he was here, I called him into the studio for a chat. And one of the questions I had was, when he decided to go from a milkman to an actor, did he have any idea what it was going to turn into?
No idea. I had no idea at all. I was a milkman and frustrated because I'd tried all sorts of things, and in the end I thought, well, I'll be a milkman because they get paid quite well, and I'll just potter along doing that, have a nice life. And then it was very frustrating. And but I think I went to radio first, and it was the story of listening to a radio station in the middle of the night, and the guy, you know, doing his nana and walking off the station and leaving a record, because we had records in those days, late 70s, and leaving that in the wash for 20 minutes, just going ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. And this is, you know, the number one station in Auckland. That's all you could hear at about 4 o'clock in the morning. And I'm doing my milk run and listening to this and thinking to myself that I'd hated that that announcer for a long time, because he always used to back announce everything exactly the same. Every record he'd come out of that was from the album so-and-so, the time is this, and Radio Hauraki, and then you'd go on to the next thing. And every time he did the same thing, and it used to really frustrate me as I delivered my milk. So I heard this guy do this and walk off the station. So as soon as I'd finished the milk run, I rushed home, had a shower, hopped into my car and drove into town and said I wanted to see the manager of the radio station. And she said, what about? I said, about the bloke that walked off the station. And so I was shepherded into the program director's office, who said, look, we're not talking about that. And I said, well, I don't really want to talk about it. I just want to talk about the fact that I have been listening to him for months and thought he was terrible. And I know I've got no qualifications, but I couldn't help thinking that I could do better myself. So, and I don't know why he did this. And it's one of those things that happened, because I discovered since then that virtually everybody goes into radio stations and asks for jobs and gets turned away. But for some reason, he seemed to think I had something and offered me a studio to go and practice in. Because as he pointed out, driving a studio is like driving a 747. It's not something you can just do. You've got to learn to do it. So for the next 2 months, I would go in there every time before I did the milk run. You know, I'd go in there for a couple of hours using the studio, and it was actually 2.5-3 months, and I got a call one night saying, would I come in and do the Midnight to Dawns, because the guy was sick and they couldn't find a replacement. So I did, and that's how it started.
And was there, would there be a thing that you could pick as what you hoped it would all lead to at that time?
Well, at that time, I would have been happy to make a living in New Zealand out of radio. But what happened was that because that worked so well, I then thought, well, you know, my greatest ambition was to be an actor, so why don't I try that with Television New Zealand? I'll go in and do the same thing. I mean, no one had walked off the station, but I thought I'd just walk in there and say, hey, you know, I'd like to her. So for me at the time, when I did that, I had decided, I'd told your mother that I was going to become a professional actor, which in a population of 3 million people was going to be impossible. And we'd lived quite well because of the things I'd done. We'd been making quite reasonable money. And I pointed out to her that we might end up being living a little more quietly because I wouldn't have the same income. But it didn't work out like that, and every step turned into more money, and I made more money every year from there on, even till today, really.
And what's the best thing you've bought with all that money? What's the best, the one thing that you love the most that you've bought? I'm talking, you know, capitalism here.
Right. Well, earlier this year, we for the last 8 years or so, we had been going to a little town called Waiwera, which is Y for water. Something or other.
Wear
some clothes. I don't know. Anyway, we discovered that it was a really quite a magic place, and in there, it's a place that has hot springs, water coming out of the ground, and we really loved it. And as the time went by, we decided that we would like to go there regularly. So a little house came up for sale, and so we bought it. And it's a 4-bedroom house with sitting there right on the beach, and you know, it's got its own hot pool coming out of the ground in the backyard. And you know, we drink too much and eat too much and do a bit of fishing. It's fun.
And I'll see you there at Christmas.
Yes.
I need to know, I know it's couched in much very serious security, but I need to know everything you can tell me about the fourth Indiana Jones movie.
I can't tell you anything. That's as much as I can tell you. In fact,
Steven Spielberg, I'm a really big fan.
Yes, I know you
more.
Are. I know you are. I'd love to tell you. Let me tell you this. When I was sent my script, I was sent just the pages that I was going to be doing, not the whole script, so I don't know what the story's about at all. And not only that, the script was printed on bright silver, like almost tinfoil. It was so that you can't even photocopy what I was going to do. So it was not possible even for me to keep the script because it's also branded with my name on it, so that if somebody else
even
got
if you
it,
found a way to copy it, it would say
my name,
Alan
on
Dale.
So, that's right.
Copied
so,
this.
Yeah, exactly. So, and in addition to that, the contract that I had to sign swore me to secrecy. And so, even though I've done it, and it's probably quite a good thing for my career to tell people that I've done it, I'm not allowed to. So here we are. I'm just telling you that, you know. So
I'm luckily, not I'm not going to put this on the radio or anything. Mm-hmm. But so you literally, you literally can't even tell me what kind of character or from what country or anything at all.
No, I play a character who's a friend of Indy's, but it's not a huge role. Don't get me wrong. I'm not sort of working alongside him for the whole period of the show, but I spent some time in New Mexico and eventually shot scenes at Universal Studios in Los Angeles.
And I love that. You went to New Mexico and sat around and did nothing in order to eventually fly home and film just down the road from where you live.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent.
That's life in the fast lane.
So I've heard it's called something along the lines of the Crystal Skull or something like that. Do you even know what it's called?
You know, I don't. You know more than I do.
Yeah, and I think the title's rubbish, and I think that's just a red herring to put us off the scent.
Well, you know, one of the things that actors in series like to do is they like to go off and do a little indie movie, you know, during their break.
So when I came back
after the break, this last break on Ugly Betty, you know, a couple of them had done indie movies, and I said, well, I've done an indie movie too. It's not such a small indie movie. It's more an Indiana Jones movie.
But more than that, I can't say. We're working with Steve. Did you call him Steve?
I did, actually. Is that all right?
Yeah. That's so cool.
He was absolutely delightful to work for. Excellent.
And, I mean, I guess we, as people who haven't been in movies, don't know what that's like. I mean, do you get to know the guy a little bit, or is it really just sort of walk in, hello, you know, Sir Spielberg, as I would say, and he says action, and then you go away?
It's sort of like that. But when you have a few minutes, if he's interested, he'll come and talk to you. And he was, as it happened. So we chatted a little, but not too much, because I wasn't there that long. So I can't say, you know, he's my best friend now. But, you know, he was delightful and easy to work with, and it was a great pleasure.
You can say he's your best friend, because nobody will ever know otherwise.
No. Well, he will.
That's true. How did that come about?
He had not watched 24, the series, at all, apparently, so the story goes. And earlier this year, he sat down to watch it. He got the box sets and started watching it. And when he got to the second episode, second series, rather, and found me playing the vice president, he liked what I did, and so got his people to ring my people, and, you know, we got together. The rest is history.
I loved that when you told me, my agent just had a call from Steve.
Yeah, that's a real joke.
A couple of years ago, you rang me and told me that.
Yeah, that's been a joke in our house for years. You know, if I'd be late home, Trace would say to me, my wife would say, well, it's okay, it's fine, no problem, darling. Stephen rang, but, you know, I'm sure he'll ring back, you see. And then one day it happened.
And there he was. Mm. So the list of projects is huge. I mean, you've mentioned 24, which I absolutely adored even before you were in it. And then I remember you ringing me up and telling me that you're going to be in something with Kiefer Sutherland called 2-4.
Well, I've never watched it, you see.
And I would say, no, you're not. You're going to be in the best show in the world. And there it was, and it was a great performance. But a lot of specific jobs. Is there anything over this time in LA, which has been, 7 years now?
Yeah.
Is there anything that you feel the most proud of?
I'm not really. I have to say, truthfully, not really. But I think the one that I enjoyed most was the one in the OC. The character in the OC, he had a twinkle in the eye. A lot of the characters that I get to play are pretty sort of dour. And you can do what you can do, but you can't really change if the character is, I mean, like Bradford Mead in Ugly Betty, he's, you know, there's not a lot of humor in him or what happens with him. But the character in the OC, he had a sense of humor, and he was naughty as well as being evil, and I enjoyed playing him.
and he liked the girls and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, which is sort of, you know, I found that came easily.
Shocker.
Probably 24 is the one that's been, that has moved my career along most, and so it would appear that most people admire that show, and so me being in that has probably helped my career most.
It was I mean, you know, I know of work that you did in between Neighbours and that, but that was a real separation from the Jim Robinson that had been kind of around your neck for forever. It seemed to me to be a chance for you to the people who knew about Neighbours, which was unimportant in America, but it seemed to me that it was a chance for you to show the people who knew about Neighbours that you're not actually Jim Robinson.
I suppose that's true. I don't think about it like that. And I look back now and I say that all these roles I've played in the United States have helped do that. But I was talking to a group of journalists in LA just 3 or 4 days ago, a whole bunch of Australian, New Zealand and British journalists. One of the questions that I was asked was, you know, so how do I feel about Jim Robinson now? And I have to say that that I still am labelled that way.
It only happened last night walking down the street in through London.
Exactly.
Somebody yelled out Jim. Something about
right.
a Magic Mushrooms episode or something.
Yeah, well, I don't know anything about that.
That's the thing. It's so long ago.
I don't remember. Must be the mushrooms. but it's interesting because, as I said to him, you guys always ask me, you know, am I sick of being called Jim Robinson? But then you go away, and in the first two sentences of your article, you mention the fact that I was Jim Robinson. So I'm not sick of it because it was a lovely part of my life, and it gave me the opportunity to earn a good living while being an actor and bring you guys up, you know, which it was a steady job in effect when you're being a dad, you know, and for me it was very valuable, and I'm very grateful for that. But it was scary then for quite a few years, and in the end, thankfully I've got a beautiful wife who was prepared to come with me to America and have a go, because that was the only way that my career was going to continue. I was going to have to find something else to do, really, and luckily it all worked out well.
And there was something that you were saying to me the other day about music, about, because I play in nightclubs and things, and the impression that one might have of that kind of music being from a former generation might not be that positive, but you told me.
Well,
that
I had this thing. Yeah, I was flying to Hawaii. I was doing some work on Lost a couple of weeks ago, and they flew me over to Hawaii, and I was sitting on the plane. I didn't feel like watching any of the movies, and so I just plugged in the headphones and pushed one of the channels, and up came your sort of, you know, music, which I normally would push a button and change, but I had a nice glass of Chardonnay in my hand and I was sitting in a nice seat, so I lay it back and turned it up loud, and I was quite surprised at how much I enjoyed it. And it sort of taught me that lesson. You know, I remember my dad, when I was growing up, the Beatles, when I was quite young, were the big thing, and my dad couldn't really stand them. And then several years later, 10, 15 years later, it was the 70s, and I was enjoying Chicago and bands like that. And I played one of the tracks. Supertramp, yeah.
ELO. Oh,
yeah. Not so much ELO, but Supertramp, yes. And playing one of these songs for my dad, and he said, yeah, but they're not the Beatles, are they? And I thought, you know, yeah, but back in the Beatles day, you didn't like them. And I've always tried not to be about music like that. But unfortunately, it sort of grows, because a lot of the rap music left, you know, I find, you know, little skinny people threatening me, you know, and telling me how tough they are. I find it a bit annoying. You know, I sort of think, well, come on, you know, come out here, let's go outside and say that to me, you know. But when it's done cleverly, which I think a lot of this music on your program is, it's really fun. And there's some great lyrics, you know, if you listen to it. But, you know, a lot of the time the music's too quiet, so all you hear is the sort of like the thumping of the bass, or, you know, sort of scratchy. But when you get it up nice and loud and really listen, it's great.
About Lost, I mean, I know we've spoken about it before, but I've just really got back into it. I'm watching the DVDs of season 3, and you're really not a very nice man.
Really?
You're really just not a very nice man, I have to say. I don't know, if you haven't seen it, you won't necessarily understand this bit of the story, but there was that scene with the scotch,
mm-hmm.
and you're just not a very nice man.
No, well, I've just done a scene with the same guy.
The
Scottish guy.
Ian. Desmond.
And this time I just shot it 2 weeks ago. I'm not allowed to say.
You can tell me something about it.
Well, No, all I can say, I mean, but I, so he comes to see me and I've led him into the urinal where I have a pee while I talk to him this time. So, you know, every time I see him, I said to him, you know, afterwards, I said, Carl, there's got to be a reckoning one of these days, you know, he's got to get me back one of these days. But every time I see him, I'm doing something hideous to him, yeah.
To just completely disrespect the poor man.
Exactly.
It's fabulous to watch. Mm. But I don't understand why the scenes you've shot are all sort of city scenes or studio scenes or whatever. Why do you have to go to Hawaii? I don't understand how that works.
That's where the show is produced.
So everything, the studios, everything are all in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Because I always kind of assumed that was just the beach scenes. And
no,
stuff.
No. They've got a full studio complex there, it's done in the same way. It's funny. Wherever you go in the world, it's virtually the same once you get onto a studio lot.
Has that? I have this picture in my head of these beautiful, you know, palms waving in the breeze kind of islands, and then suddenly you've got this monolith of a studio complex. I mean, has it kind of changed things there?
Oh, well, when you're in Honolulu, one of the disappointments of Honolulu is that you go there and you know, the stores, the shopping complexes are exactly the same as the ones, you know, a mile from our house in Los Angeles. And it's a disappointment that, you know, these chains of stores get in there. They're all very clever, I guess, much cleverer than me. But in the end, they sort of spoil the natural state. So Hawaii is a group of islands, and the main one, Oahu, is a bit spoiled by that. And so the downtown where I stay is, you know, it's all high rise, everyone lives in apartments and things, which is nothing like you'd expect. But when you get into some of the outer islands, it's beautiful. I don't get to go there when I'm working on Lost. I'm working on the main island.
What are some other things that you do with your spare time? What do you love to do?
Oh my God, I've got these two little boys and a beautiful wife, I must admit. I just like to be with them, and we've got a lovely pool in the backyard, and that's, you know, that's my life. I don't know, really, there's not much more to it than that. And of course, because I work in an industry that takes me here and Hawaii, and, you know, we're going down to Queensland next week and working there for a month, you know, I really don't need to have my hobby is my career, so that's what I do. What I love about Waiwara and being in that area is the fishing, and I've got a mate down there who loves to fish, and we go there, and we were there at Christmas time, and we had, you know, fresh scallops dredged fresh each day, every night, cooked in a different way. And I mean, that's my pleasure, and being with my girl and my little boys and my big boys when they can be with me.
World famous.